My name is Lainey Zuber, and you're listening to another interview from my project, 2020 Summer Stories. This interview features Robin Newcomb.
She spent her summer in Missoula, Montana. We talked about her time on a farm navigating COVID boundaries, finding a new community in a pandemic, and organizing for racial justice.
So by mid-May, I was already out here in Missoula. And well, basically, this May was not where I expected myself being. I'm sure a lot of people are probably saying that. So I had been planning to move to Baltimore and just like kind of bartend and figure things out and find the real job after graduation, which is kind of funny because I think before like COVID and all that, like life already felt as like unpredictable as it could get and like risky and foundationless and like crazy, you know? And then of course COVID hit and I was like, wow, I really need a job and a place to live and I have to leave here by May. So I applied to like 1 billion places and then got one of them. And so I drove to Missoula, Montana. And so I showed up here based, I think, on like May 5th. So by mid-May, I had been in Montana for about 2 weeks. And when I got here, it was like super lockdown time. Like I was basically traveling across the country in the height of lockdown. And it was kind of like surreal coming out here because there was like not a lot of people on the roads and like hotels were closed. And I was like camping in like fishing access sites and like weird shit like that. Cause you like couldn't go into park, you know, like you're just so bizarre and dystopian. And out here, everything was like closed, like totally closed. Even though when I got here, the whole county that I'm in, which is like relatively big for Montana because it's a college town, they had only had one new case for 2 months, which was so different. I mean, I thought like Ohio was doing a good job, you know, and then I came out here and I was like, whoa, there's like hardly anything here, but it was like still super locked down. So it was pretty crazy moving to a new place like during that. Like the only, I had like a mandatory 2 week lockdown or self-quarantine because I was from out of state. So that was probably around May 15th. That was probably in the last days of like my mandatory self-isolation. I literally didn't go anywhere. I just showed up on this farm and lived in this little tiny cabin. I had a few other coworkers that had also just showed up and worked like 6 days a week and then kind of just hung out. And I remember like the only place I went those first 2 weeks was like I went to the grocery store wearing like 3 masks one time. And it was like, after especially, I had been like pretty much entirely by myself for like the first 2 months of quarantine in Ohio. And it was like kind of like just crazy to like see other people around. It's kind of funny thinking back to that because it was just like so new still at that point. And I remember just being like, whoa, like other people, like even just at the grocery store. And it felt like so exciting. It's, I don't know, it was funny. And so May was kind of like a lot of just kind of adjusting and I guess it was, I mean, kind of chaotic, but for me, I was just really glad and felt lucky to like have a place to be and have work, even though it paid pretty little, but I didn't have to pay rent and all that. And so it was kind of just like a relief to like not be looking like, you know, desperately like looking everywhere, trying to like figure out where my next step was going to be because I at least had things sorted for a few months. And I also felt really lucky because I got to spend a lot of time with other people because my coworkers and I had to live and work together. Like there wasn't any possible way to quarantine from each other. We had like a shared kitchen and we, you know, were always on the same plot of land. And they were all people that I like really wouldn't have probably been in the same place as otherwise or like been close friends with. But it was really nice to just like be doing work where I could be outside and be around other people and just like talk to people that I didn't know, you know, which is really nice. And my bosses at the farm also lived there with us and we would have dinner with them every night. And so it was pretty nice to have people around. Let's see. Oh, I was also supposed to be finishing classes the first few weeks that I was here and I just didn't. But I definitely didn't graduate from college. But at that point it just seemed so like ridiculous to even think about that. Like I was like sitting in my boss's yard, like in the cold, like when it was like dark out after work, like trying to like write a paper about like Althusse, or like this is so dumb. So yeah, that was a pretty big pivot as well. I guess I'll move into June, a really big transition here was even here in Missoula, the Black Lives Matter protest really blew up. I mean, obviously not like the same way compared to a lot of major cities and stuff, but for a small little town in Montana, it was still a pretty big deal. And I remember I was like driving back from the laundromat one day, and it was right when things were starting, and there was like three people outside the courthouse holding signs, and I was like, oh, should I like stop and talk to them? You know, like I want to like get and, you know, organize with other people, but I didn't. And I was like, well, I guess that's just the extent of what Missoula's got going on. And then like 3 days later, I was like driving back from the grocery store, and there was like 200 people, like chants and signs and people honking and all of that. And that that continued a lot. And so then I would start going after work and join. And this is maybe kind of a tangent, but it wasn't like a super, I don't know, just from like the organizing perspective, it wasn't really like an organized protest. It mm-hmm. was just like a bunch of people who like had showed up to like be in the same place. And there wasn't really clear like what like the shared, you know, like platform was or what people were protesting for or against. Bunch of people showing up in the same space. But for me, that was kind of pivotal, being in a new place, because it was like this like protest as a space of like physical proximity to other people for the first time since coming out here. You know, everybody's like wearing masks and all that, and we're outside, but just to like talk to people and like especially not just like other people, but people that you know shared something really important in common, that you all cared about this thing. For me, it was really grounding, because it felt really strange to be in kind of this like crisis situation in a place where like I didn't know who my community was, like at least in my immediate place, where I was like, you know, in Worcester or in DC or anything like that. Like I felt like when things went down, like I knew who needed help, or who I could ask for help, or who needed what, you know. There was really like community for me in those places. And here I definitely, it felt really, I don't know, unsettling to be like, you know, my coworkers before, I'm like really, I don't think we were totally on the same page about a lot of things. And so that felt really strange to see just like, you know, this like national just crisis going on and not really being able to talk about it with people. So that was like kind of hard to like keep things together, especially in like a new place. Oh, one day I remember really strongly from that period is we were in the greenhouse just like seeding plants, and my boss, a little backstory there is that my boss's husband is, as I told you about, is like a progressive local politician, and his wife is also like involved in stuff like that. His wife is my boss, and so they were like super into like, you know, listening to NPR and like reading things, talking about it, blah, 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 and like, I don't know, local politics, stuff like that. And so they kind of talk about things like we're on the same side, and we were in the greenhouse that day, and she was playing the New York Times, whatever the fuck it's called, the Daily. And it was, I don't really usually pay attention, but it's just unbelievably like patronizing, condescending, so detached, like portrayal of like Black communities and protests, and like so infantilizing and just detached from reality. And I like, I was in this new workplace, and it was like my boss playing this. I'm the kind of person that like when I'm like angry or something, like everybody's gonna know about it. It's really difficult for me to like hold things like that back. And I remember just like glitching out, because I was just like viscerally angry, just like shaking with anger. And I felt like I couldn't say anything, because I was just wanted to be like, I don't want to hear this. And I just remember like leaving the greenhouse and going into our little kitchen and like breaking down and crying, not in like a like, oh, I'm sad crying way, but just like your body like responding, freaking out, you know. And I remember that really, really strongly. And so, yeah, I think maybe that was another strange thing about being in new places. Previously, I think my community around me had always been based on like things that we had in common, you know, whereas once I've moved out here, it's been very much like people who I'm like performing the same labor with, which is a really different thing. I'll keep scooting along. As we moved like deeper into the summer, my hours started like skyrocketing at mm-hmm. the farm. Like when I started out, we were working like 40 hours a week. And by like early mid-June, we were working like 60 hours a week. And it continued that way, and a little more by the time it got to like July and August. But yeah, June, it was like about 60 hours a week. And that is not like something I signed up. Like my employers didn't express that at all. They didn't make that clear when they hired me, that like our hours were going to go up and we weren't going to be compensated anymore. Pay stayed the same while we were working like 20 more hours a week. you know, how I think about things. I was like, sweet, opportunity for organizing. Let's get together, kids. Like, we're going to organize. And that was kind of a difficult challenge as well, because in other like circumstances, it would have been a really easy organizing opportunity. They were kind of understaffed. They totally relied on us. We could have like, we were all like, you know, agreed on a lot of things. If we had been like, here are some things that we're sending out as demands, it would have been quite easy because they, I mean, you, like they couldn't, they could not run their operation without us. It's really busy and we were all doing a ton of work. But I really struggled with that because it was my first time kind of trying to organize with people who just really did not occupy the same class position, in the sense that most of them were like, you know, like kids with rich parents who were paying their bills and were like here to like have a nice outdoorsy summer. And that was quite like, one of my coworkers was like a few years older than me and, you know, like had already been like working on her own for years and stuff like that, but like was kind of just there for like the experience. And the rest of them were like either still in college or just out of college and like looking for something like semi-environmental to be doing and like weren't really relying on it. So that was a little bit alienating as well, feeling frustrated and feeling kind of just like resigned to like, well, I guess I'll just leave it this way. In contrast with that, and especially related to COVID, I did find that like the kind of one place that while they didn't, like my coworkers didn't really care about like wages so much and like cared more about like, you know, having a nice relationship with our bosses and the family and all that. Mm. They really cared about COVID stuff because that was something that was, I guess, and I mean, obviously not in all ways, but in some ways kind of an equalizer, something that would like personally have a stake in all of my coworkers' lives. One of my coworkers was still in school, but she was planning on going back and like living with her grandparents. One of my coworkers was trying to like, you know, her school was like teetering on like whether they would be in person or not. And she was like, I can't, you know, like things that like were actually really important to people more immediately than just like, oh yeah, like whatever. And so that was kind of a really interesting development. We kind of started talking about it more and I was like, huh, like, you know, these people I'm working with maybe seemed, I kind of resigned myself to not organizing anything because they didn't really have this interest. But here's something where we really do line up together. People were like, we hadn't really talked about it openly with each other yet. And then we started talking about it more and realizing that everybody kind of felt like, even though like, you know, my coworkers had kind of different stances on like COVID and like how safe you need to be. And like one of them would like still like sometimes like go out to get food and stuff like that. But we were all very clear on like, we don't feel like this workplace is like safe or doing like even the bare minimum of what it should be doing. And that was a place that we could all really draw from like personal experience on how that was affecting us. Around like late June, my dad was living in Utah and he was like, I hadn't seen him in like, I don't know, a long time. And so he was like, wanted to visit, but it was like really up in the air because it's like, he's like a cancer survivor and he's pretty old and has always done like pretty physical work, like construction work most of his life. So it's like, he's like really, really kind of on edge about COVID stuff. He had to stop working his job and he hadn't had any work since like February because of it. And so we like I really wanted to make it happen. We were like gonna go on like a hiking trip. And so I was trying to be like really careful like the 2 weeks before, like I didn't go like anywhere. And then I remember like walking, we like closed the Armistead at night. And so we like, I have to go into my boss's house like to bring them like the money. And I remember like bringing them the Armistead money that night. And there was like maybe like 15 people all like hanging out in their kitchen together, like, and like friends from like out of state having a get together, all hanging out together in their kitchen. And I just was like it made me want to like start crying because I was like, I am trying so hard. Like, I just want to see my dad. I see him like once a year, you know, and like, this is like a joke to you all. It was particularly frustrating because my boss's husband was like one of the people who like made the mask ordinance and then like wouldn't wear a mask around people. And I was like, you clearly just don't have as much of a stake in this. And so that was something my coworkers would start kind of talking about, being like, yeah, like, you know, them and their kids, like if they got it, like it would be okay because they like have really good health coverage and they could just work remotely for a little while. But like, that's not the case for me, at least. And I told my coworkers about how I didn't have health insurance, which they didn't know. Part of it was an element of like, we all have a stake in this. And part of it I really appreciated was an element of like, well, Robbie has more of a stake in it. And like, I don't have anybody who could like pay my bills if I got sick, you know, like I'm not going to like get a ventilator at like the clinic down the street. So it was just like, it I felt a lot of anger this summer, is what I'm getting at. Anyway, we kind of started talking with each other more about, like, we have to do something to, like, get some changes here about COVID stuff. And so we were, like, talking about it a lot in the fields. Like, it was the kind of funny thing where, like we spent so much time together. Like, we were really close and talked about pretty much everything. So, like, one person would be, like, at the other field for a minute. Like, we'd come back and be like, okay, so we talked about COVID stuff more. Like, what if we bring it up this way, you know? And so it was actually the week that it happened on the day that I was out. I took a day off to go see my dad, which was, on another note, also super difficult because I, like, well, this is, like, another tangent, but, like, I remember, like, walking up to see my dad, who I hadn't seen in a long time. And, like, I was, like, just by reflex, like, I went to give him a hug and he, like, backed away. And I had, like, never had that happen to me before. And it was, like, so jarring. But it was, I mean, like, you know, we still, like, we're together for 3 days and, like, we were always wearing a mask and 6 feet apart. It was like, I don't know, you do what you have to do. Anyway, so I was gone on that day and my coworkers, they were all having communal dinner together and somehow it just, like, came up. And so they kind of dove into it. And I don't know exactly how it went down, but they said that in that conversation, you know, they took it really well. Like, my boss's husband is, like, very, like, diplomatic, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, like, I totally understand. Like, what do we need to do to make you guys feel comfortable? And so they were like, yeah, like, I'm really glad we talked about it. And then after that, like, it started becoming apparent that it, like, actually hadn't gone well. And, like, one that stands out quite prominently is we were all in the yard, like, kind of at the end of the day, we would always do scallions and see, it's kind of just a process where you can, like, sit down and, like, you know, bunch them together and you have to trim them. It takes a long time. So we would, like, always sit, like, kind of in a circle in the yard on these logs. And we were like, okay, kind of the system that we come up with was like, you know, we don't want to tell our bosses or their families, you know, what to do or how to live their lives. So mm-hmm. The alternative to that is, like, we can just kind of have our own pod and just distance from our bosses as much as we can, you know, wearing masks and, you know, like, maybe not eating dinners together. And not, we would usually do dishes inside their house. And so we're like, okay, like, that's where we're just gonna, like, you know, like, then you guys can do whatever you want. We're no judgment or all that. And so we were going to do scallion circle and we were like, okay, let's just, like, move the benches a little bit apart so we can, you know, we don't have to be, like, right next to him. Like, and I was like, I don't know, like, maybe we should talk to Kim about it first. And so we, like, move apart and Kim was, like, kind of acting weird. And she said something to us about, like, well, like, we're just, since this is what you guys want, like, we're just gonna have, we'll just, like, leave dinner outside for you guys and, like, you can do whatever you want. And then my coworker Lena, who is, like, the sweetest person ever and also, like, kind of the least concerned about COVID stuff, was like, oh, but, like, I like having dinner with you guys. And Kim, my boss, like, was like, well, yeah, I do too, but I just don't feel comfortable anymore. And then, like, paused and turned back to us and was like, well, actually, I just don't feel welcome. And then, like, stormed back inside and we were all like, what? And everybody was just, like, totally silent and I was just, like, made eye contact with all of them, like, going around in a circle, like, over and over again. And my boss's daughter was still, like, sitting outside on the porch, like, 20 feet away, so, like, none of us talked about it. And then Lena just, like, started, like, crying, like, tears streaming down her face, and, like, none of us were talking. We were all just like, what's going on? And then, like, our boss's, like, daughter came over to, like, apologize to us and was like, wow, I'm sorry about that. But, like, can you also understand how this is, like, really difficult for our family? And we were like, what? No, I can't. Like, so basically that was kind of a theme for several weeks of, like, things not going very well when we, like, you know, it had been a, like, super friendly environment of, like, yeah, like, we want to be a family, like, we all work here together. But then, like, as soon as we, like, asked for pretty basic safety, it was, like, suddenly really different. And I think it was very much them reading it as, like, for us, it was like an act of, like, respect to, you know, care about each other in that way and want to have precautions. But I think to them, it was like an act of distrust. Whereas for me, it was like, it's just by the numbers. Even if we all did the best that we can, like, it's still not safe to have this many people together all the time. Anyway, that was a big theme for a while. But we kind of, like, pushed through with it, and largely because one of my coworkers, her partner had gotten a job in Kodiak, Alaska, so she was planning on moving up there at the end of the season, and, like, basically getting through Canada and or getting on a ferry, it was, like, crazy, crazy strict, and her ferry was, like, $4,000, and so, like, if she, like, had contact with anybody who had tested positive within, like, 2 months or something, like, she basically, like, wouldn't get to go live with her partner. We are, like, super being serious about this, and she, like, really pushed it hard and, like, didn't give a fuck. And it's really, like, we're like, great, okay, we've got a system, it's working, we're, like, wearing masks around each other, and, like, we, you know, like, would still eat dinner together, but, like, we do it outside, and, like, separate tables, like, spaced apart. And I was like, cool, like, problem solving, like, we can still, like, try to live kind of semi-normal life. And I think of, like, July and August, kind of in that realm of, like, we kind of worked things out a little bit. And I guess I mostly think of it as I feel like I, like, lived the same week for what feels like a year. But it was kind of a beautiful thing in its own way, in the sense that I was so grateful to be, I don't know, I guess I feel conflicted about this, because we were working really insane hours. Like, there was, on the weekdays, there was literally not any time that I was awake and not working. Like, I would wake up and then do pre-work chores and then go to work. We'd have an hour break for lunch, and then we'd be working until 8 or 9 p.m. We'd have dinner together, then we'd do the dishes. And, like, sometimes then we'd have, like, before bed chores, like, putting chickens away and stuff like that. Sometimes I'd, like, clean up a little bit, and, like, it was, like, I would go to sleep. And that was, like, every day, constantly. But I was so grateful to be busy in its own way. Like, I don't want that to, like, seem like it overrules the fact that I had a lot of, like, anger at being, like, exploited so harshly. Mm-hmm. But, like, compared to, like, the really early months of quarantine, it was a relief to not just, like, be alone with my thoughts, and, like, to be really busy, like, producing something and food that I, you know, would deliver to the people who were going to eat it. And feeling useful, I think, was something I was also refreshing just coming out of college in general, but especially during quarantine. And so me and my coworkers got, I think especially through the experience of organizing around COVID stuff, we got really close with each other. And kind of like I was saying, like, you know, really different people, not really people who would have been in the same place otherwise, but, you know, like, if anyone was gone for like 30 minutes, they'd come back and we'd be like, oh, like, how was your 30 minutes? Like, did you think about anything, see anything, you know? So I was really grateful to feel companionship during that time and feel, like, fulfilled in its own way of feeling productive and in community with other people. And also it kind of allowed me to almost, like, forget about COVID at times. So, like, we were seriously in lockdown for my coworker Jesse, who was moving to Alaska. Like, we didn't go anywhere. Like, me and my coworker Jill, we would, like, do our laundry in buckets every Sunday and, you know, sit around on the farm. And I don't even know what we did. Like, I mean, I guess we didn't have very much time, but that's kind of what a lot of the summer feels like to me, is, like, being out in the sun a lot and going and stealing a bunch of produce for ourselves, eating a lot of raspberries and, you know, just being really silly. Like, you know, I just mostly think of, like, driving this shitty old stick shift pickup around, learning to drive stick and, you know, fucking up the orders somehow, you know, just a bunch of ridiculous things that in its own way kind of didn't feel like this, you know, apocalyptic world. But then, of course, there's always, like, reminders of it. And it was a strange juxtaposition to, like, be in this, you know, little, like, farm enclave, and then also, like, being connected to the outer world through, like, social media and stuff, and seeing just, like, you know, like, crisis after crisis. And, like, that was kind of exhausting, I think, in its own way, of, like, not feeling super connected to that or connected to people in a lot of other places. But I did feel very much, like, in the moment, I guess, for a lot of that time. In the end of August, I started looking towards, I was like, I need to have a winter job. I had only planned when I came out here just to, like, wow, I really need an immediate job. Like, I'm going to work this job until it's over, and then I'm going to come back to the East Coast. Like, totally going to be over by then. Wrong again. And so then I kind of got to August, and I was like, I want to stay here for the winter. You know, like, I don't want to move again during this mess. And also starting to kind of feel for the first time that, like, I had kind of, like, made in some little ways. It was difficult, of course, because of quarantine, but, like, starting to feel some sort of community. I had gotten pretty involved earlier in the summer with some of the stuff with the protests, and there was a group that had previously been Black Lives Matter Missoula, then changed its name to the 1700, that I was part of, like, a community safety team with every time they would do events, and meeting people through that, and meeting people at the farm and doing the farmers market. It was kind of the I think this is the first time I've just been thinking about this recently, of that, like, if I were to leave this place, like, there would be something to lose. And I think I've never really felt that way before, just because I've been kind of like super transient and always in different places. So I decided to stay here for the winter, and I started looking around for jobs. And I was like, man, fuck having a career. I can't believe a year ago I thought I was going to have like a career. It's ridiculous. The world is ending. There's no time for that. I might as well just learn a skill. So I was like, maybe I'll learn to bake bread. I started asking around, and I just like super by coincidence got really lucky and got hired at this bakery when I should have had a lot of experience and had absolutely none. And so that was really exciting. But it was also really, I think of August when I started that as like a really crazy time, because I was working full time at the farm, which was like 60 hours a week, and then working several days a week here. Like I would work from like 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the farm, and then I would leave at 3 p.m. and work over at the bakery from like 3:30 to 2 a.m. and then go back to work at 8 a.m. the next day. And that was really, really exhausting and really hard. And I think I was like, harder for me to like find joy in little things and kind of just feeling more resentment. And that went on for a decent amount of time, but also a time of like, maybe this is another tangent, but I thought back a lot to like the time I spent doing living wage stuff in college, and like having always been able to feel like sympathy and like emotion and connection to a lot of the workers that I was working with. But I don't think I'd ever really been able to feel the same like empathy of like what it's like to like, you know, work like 72 hours in a week, like week after week. And so I think that was kind of, I guess, formative as well, even though I'm glad I'm not in that position anymore. August wasn't, I mean, like the ending of August, I was kind of in the middle of that time for me. So the time frame doesn't feel like a super like neat ending point, I don't know, in the way that it would if I was still in college. That's kind of where things ended up. I think this, it was also around that time that we started, cases were rising a lot in Missoula, and I had a few COVID scares, not of myself, but of like being in contact with people that I worked with, and like not having any control over that. Like it was like, you know, like I didn't really do anything, but it was like people that I had to be around. So that was also kind of marked that time. And also, cases rising crazily in Missoula, but also like nothing changing here. Bars and restaurants are still open. And like, you know, by the end of like August, early September, like we start having like, you know, like 50 to 80 cases, new cases, like in a day. And that was, you know, like 80 times more than it was when I got here. And so things feel super kind of asymmetrical, and it's like totally irrational, and it doesn't really make any sense. And it's super weird to like walk around Missoula and see all that happening, even while that's like not the life that you're living. And yeah, that's kind of a weird ending point, but that's, I think, around where August ended for me.
I started by asking Robin to go into more detail about the anti-racist organization she worked with in Missoula.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see, because kind of like at first when I was saying, I was like, you know, when I saw there's like three people outside the courthouse with signs, I was like, all right, I guess that's the organization level that Missoula's got. Cool. Interesting. Got a lot of work to do. But it was also strange, kind of like what I was talking about before, of like I had such a like an inclination to want to like take initiative with things, but also feeling like so much like I shouldn't and wasn't in a place to do that because I'm so new to this community. And, you know, like it would have felt quite strange. Like I was like, oh, maybe I should like flyering stuff or like getting people together. Like, but it was like, I just don't have the basis and the knowledge of this community to be doing that. So I need to find the people who do. So through some people who I had met at like the original courthouse protest, which was, oh, maybe I should go into this. This was a pretty interesting moment as well. I had forgotten to bring it up. So I had mentioned how the courthouse protests were like super, and this is related because this is kind of what the next organization was born out of, was this disorganization. So at the, it was just, there was no like organizers, like people had just kind of shown up organically. And then some people had kind of like stepped into that role, like, you know, having a megaphone and like leading chants and stuff like that. I think mostly like BSA students at the university maybe, but it was like, I don't know, from anyone who's like been to like super organized like protests and stuff like that before, it was like clearly not that. And there's like problems that can come out of that. And that was made really evident by one night I was there at the courthouse and some of the like semi organizers were like, you know, just like talking about like their personal experiences with like racism and marginalization and all that. And then all of a sudden, There's like, you see somebody running and some people running after, and it's like a sound and a commotion, and then the organizers are like, run. And everybody like sprints out of the courthouse lawn, and people are like hiding behind a wall. And then somebody was like, was there a gunshot? And there wasn't, but it was like really, it was just really kind of scary and chaotic moment. Mostly because there had been like the big conflict at this protest was that, you know, all these people showed up to protest, and then in response to that, there was basically like militia members as like counter protests, like people with these like lined up their huge trucks and their like Gadsden flags and their Trump flags and like assault rifles, and would just like march around the outskirts of the protest. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, it was pretty scary. I mean, not as much for me, but I mean, definitely because Missoula is pretty white. For the people of color, especially like Black Indigenous people who were there, so we were like, wow, this is kind of scary. And then we were like trying to figure out what's going on, and the organizers are like, hey, okay, so you see those guys over there with the assault rifles? And we were like, what? And they were like, yeah, like, you know, they were like, I guess these people were like kind of on the fence. They like weren't totally with the militia, but like obviously the like implication was that they were. But they were apparently, I guess, had approached the organizers and were like, we just want to like keep the peace. Like if any like rioting happens, like, we're just here to make sure nobody gets hurt. And so these semi-organizers were like, okay, like let's make a deal with you. Like fine. Like if there's anything that goes down, like you guys have got to be the ones to keep people safe, the organizers safe especially. And so they're like, yeah, those people over there, like, they said that they would do this and they lived up to it. Like somebody just tried to like threaten one of our organizers and they kept us safe. Like these people are like heroes, and they like start chanting Black Lives Matter together. And I was like, something feels off here. This like feels a little too optimistic. I don't like, I would like it if it worked this way. And like, maybe it does. Maybe we can all just like join hands. I don't know. Like that's kind of weird. And then the next day, I like tried to like find some like news articles about it, and the headlines, yeah, it like kind of just was like vague and seemed like what I had been told. And then I mentioned it to somebody that I met through the protest, and she was like, that is not what happened at all. But she didn't go into detail. And then I don't know how to describe this. I didn't know about the incident that had happened, but basically there was this really terrible incident that I'll go into in a second. And so kind of out of that, local organizers were like, wow, we need like an actual organization, because this is what happens when you aren't organized. And so then there was like, after that, there was like some really like, the first one was a like, very thoughtful, intentional, well-organized protest in a space where like, because of like city guidelines, there couldn't be any guns, blah, 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 like lots of like speakers, like it was clear who was doing what. And I got involved with that because they like were looking for people to be part of like a community safety team to like run security for the event. And somebody reached out to me and was like, hey, we need more people kind of last minute to do this. Can you do it? And I was like, sure. So that was like looking for people who had any like de-escalation training, which I had done with Sanctuary DMV and C in the past. And so it was kind of just like basic de-escalation of like looking for like potential problems at a protest before they happen, like being able to like, you know, de-escalation stuff, like bystander intervention, all that. And like we would basically all like kind of chat together and like we're in all of the potentially dangerous areas of the protest and or rally, I suppose, and just like keeping an eye on everything, like people recognizing people from the militia, people recognizing people who had caused trouble like at local protests in the past. And so that was like very like positive and super grounding for me to be like, okay, great. It's great to be connected to some people who know what they're doing. And then so like the second or third event that group, they're called the 1700 now, put on was, I did like security section again, was they, it was like a, I don't know how to describe this, but they asked everyone to like come and park their cars around downtown Missoula, like fill up all of them who fill around the courthouse and businesses and stuff like that. And then they got two of the local radio stations to like agree to play their broadcast for like 2 or 3 hours. And so what they asked everybody to do was like park their cars and then turn to this radio station. So it was basically like everybody around downtown had to hear it, even though the numbers were bad enough at that time and they couldn't be like an actual rally. And what was on that broadcast was the story of the man who had been involved in that incident that I was telling you about. Basically, there was like what had actually happened that night whenever they like told everybody to run when I was there. Was that there was, and this was like the man telling his story over the radio broadcast. And So he was talking about how he's a young, probably my age, Black man from Missoula, grew up here and was going to protest. And basically had to walk through this alley to get over there. And like people from the militia had kind of like cornered him. And were like, what are you doing here? You look suspicious. Like, we're here to keep people safe, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, just like really scared and like trying to get away. And so he kind of like turned around and like tried to, I don't remember exactly the details, but he like basically like started driving away to go home and like noticed that he was being followed by one of, like in a truck by one of the militia people and was scared. And so he went back to the protest. And so he was trying to get back to like the courthouse lawn where the main protest was going, and he had to go through this alley to get there. And they like kind of like cornered him, and he was like, I'm just trying to get by. He was like on his bike, and so he was just like, I just need to get over to the courthouse where like there's people there and like, you know, like people can see what's happening, and like I just need to get over there. So he tried to like get past them, and they like tore him off his bike and like tried to like take his mask off, and he basically like was able to like get out of their grasp and just started running. So that's what we had seen over there, because he was running to like try to like run to the courthouse like for refuge basically, and the militia people like ran after him and tackled him to the ground and hurt him pretty badly. And that's what the organizers had been like cheering as like keeping everybody safe. So it was pretty horrific. And then like the cops had been called, and like basically that was another part of it. It was like the cops had like, he like watched like the cops like shake hands with the militia people, and then like the cops were just like basically totally like intimidating him and like threatening to hurt him when he was like, I need help, like I'm in a crisis anyway. So that kind of horrible incident is one of this kind of more super organized organizations had come out of, and they were originally called Black Lives Matter Missoula, but because out here it's there's like a really, really high population, I mean comparatively very high population of Native and Indigenous people, they like represent a lot of like the leadership in like racial justice and organizing around here, and so they changed the name to be just like more reflective of the community that we're in. So it's led by mostly Black and Native people in the community, and they've been doing super good work. I haven't been as involved with them lately, but I like, they just haven't been able to have events. They were supposed to have one a few weeks ago that I was going to work with, but that was super great to like learn from and get involved with people in the community. And it was also really helpful as kind of a segue with my, I had a lot of political arguments with my boss's husband, the local politician. Right. So that was a cool thing to be able to point to and be like, look at these people in your own community who've been here forever who are like doing this work. And like, it's not just like me, some like, you know, Marxist spewing stuff at you. That was a nice way to feel connected.
Next, I wanted to hear more about how COVID affected her job on the farm.
Yeah, I found it really interesting because, you know, being on like Twitter and stuff or like talking to people would really talk about like feeling like they had the same day since March, you know, just like the same day over and over again. But for me, I feel like I had really like a really distinct 7 days, and those were like, I just was having the same week repeated over and over. So like, it was like a little bit of a different situation from a lot of people. On Monday mornings, every morning we would get up and we would like, you know, show up to work and like have a little morning meeting for the day. And then me and my coworker Jill would drive the sick shift over to the other field, and all of us would cut salad with scissors for like 4 hours straight. That was like the main crop of the farm. And so we'd all be like sitting there in this field. It felt like, I can't even imagine how many hours I spent just in that salad field this summer. So we would cut salad with scissors into buckets, and kind of just like, there'd usually be at least two of us there. And so that would be like, we would really like, you know, talk there. And my coworker Jill and I, sometimes we would put on like a podcast or something, or like, you know, Democracy Now, like news updates and stuff like that. And so we would work at the other field for several hours. We would drive back, quickly have lunch for like an hour, and then do more work in the afternoon. And by the end of the day, we would have scallions, which is where we would all kind of, like the first time that we would all be together again, and we would kind of sit in a circle and talk about things. And that was also a space where we got to talk about things with our boss, Kim, and so I felt like we got to have some nice conversations there. And we did talk a lot about political stuff, and sometimes things got kind of heated, especially when my boss's husband around, because he's really defensive, because he's like best friends with a cop that calls himself progressive and all that. Anyway, so that was like kind of the typical daily routine, and it was like a really clear, like we had different orders every day of the week, and that repeated. Like on Tuesdays and Fridays, we always had restaurant orders, so we'd be like really rushing on Tuesdays and Fridays, and so we had to like harvest everything and wash it and package it and get delivered by 3 p.m. like always really crazy on those days. And then Fridays were really huge because we had farmers market the next day and we had to sell stuff to the Good Food Store. And, you know, just like, so it was like we kind of had that regimen of our days were structured based on like who we were selling things to. And that always repeated. And then on really good days, it was really, really hot in that period of the summer. And on really good days, we would get off like before, like basically if we got us before 8 p.m., we would all like jump on our bikes and just like race to the river because there's a river a few blocks away and just like throw ourselves in the river. And I remember feeling like really distinct joy in those few weeks of days when we would have that. So that was part of our routine as well. So we'd work pretty late hours and then go have dinner together outside with the family, the farm family, every weekday. And then on Saturdays, either me or my coworker Mina would get up really early and go work the farmer's market. And that was a nice grounding thing as well to like get to talk to people in the community and recognize people and check in with people about COVID stuff and how people are feeling. And so that was kind of my rough routine, like really long days, Monday through Friday, sometimes getting off a little bit early, going to the river, making just an insane amount of production of food in farmer's market on Saturday. And then Sunday was our like day of rest. We would like do our laundry together and kind of just like sit outside in the sun and make some like ridiculous cocktail with things we found on the farm and kind of just hang out together. And sometimes, you know, like my coworkers would go see a friend or something, or, you know, I'd go for a hike or something. The week was always the same and we were pretty much always on this one little plot of land. I think the next thing you asked about was like about COVID precautions, right? So the two big things were that we would all be having dinner together every night, which doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but it was my boss, her husband, and then they have three kids. And at one point, it was all of them were living in the house there. So there would be like five interns, my boss, her husband, and then their six kids and significant others. So it was like a pretty broad pool. You know, even though it was like technically just the people who lived there, their immediate family, it was like a lot of people to be sharing a pod with like every night or several nights a week. And so that was a big one where we were like, we need to get out of the way to make this work. Like lots of people aren't seeing their families. Not sure why you guys think you're exempt from that. Anyway. And the other part was, we worked super closely with, Kim, our boss, and Kim was super, super, like, Kim didn't really leave the farm at all. And so we weren't concerned about her at all. But her husband, Josh, is this really social guy, really, just really sweet guy, like, really cares about the community, has lived here since college. And he's friends with, like, every person in town. And he sees them all as, like, really close, dear friends, very genuinely. But I guess for him, it's, like, a show of trust to be like, I don't need to wear my mask around you. But yeah. We were like, you're friends with every person in this town. Like something is not adding up. So that was pretty concerning to us. But it's like, I think it was hard to express to our bosses that like we're not in an equal power dynamic here. Like you think that like we're all like friends and family and we can just like talk about things and trust each other. But it's like we can't say everything we think to you, you know? Like we can't be like we don't trust Josh. We can't say that. Like it's not the same as them like expressing something to us. And so, yeah, that was kind of the major thing, which is that, you know, after that night that I was telling you about where my boss, like, really snapped at us and we were all freaking out for, like, a few days, they would just, like, bring the food. Because part of our pay was that we would have meals. And so we couldn't just be like, we're not going to come to dinner because we're like, well, we're only making, like, $40 a day because of we're supposed to get food, you know? So we're kind of trapped in that position. So they would just like, at first they were like, just like bring the food out and like leave. And we were just like, so on the porch feeling super weird being like, what? And then we like actually had a conversation about it being like, okay, this is a little dramatic. Like we could literally just like move our tables a little bit apart and like put a serving table in the middle and we can like, they all talk to each other. And that worked pretty well. And we just like, me and my coworkers just like started like buying hand sanitizer and putting it everywhere because they don't sanitize like literally anything. We were like, what the fuck? Like, this is so weird. And then we also asked that when we were like, you know, within, even outside, if we were within 6 feet of each other, like to wear masks on each other. That was what my boss was like, really, like they acted like it was so dramatic. And we were like, this is really not dramatic. It's really not that hard. And so those were kind of like the major changes. And then me and my coworkers, since we were in our own little pod, we were like, well, we're just like, we're not going to go anywhere. Like if we have, you know, we have to go to the grocery store, we wear a mask. If you have like a friend in town, you see them like outside 6 feet apart. And so that was the changes that we made. And I think our boss kind of still did things the same way. So those were, I think, really the COVID changes that I can think of.
We then began discussing a recurring theme in her story, anger. So I asked, how did she conceptualize the importance of anger and its place in so many events over the course of the summer?
I guess I kind of will lead into that by saying that, remember, like in the very beginning of quarantine, like before I was out here, talking to some people, and I'm going to try to keep this short, but basically like me and Pedro were the only people who were around, and I was talking to Eleanor about it. She was like, how are you guys both feeling about it? We're all like freaking out. And I was like, I think it's actually kind of grounding for me and Pedro in our own ways, because like this is very connected to things that we've both kind of like dedicated our lives to. And mm-hmm. It's almost sobering and grounding to see, like, even in, you know, because of atrocity, but like to see everyone paying attention to it for once, mm-hmm. you know, and like to be in June. And it was so refreshing to me to have days where, like, if I went on Instagram, like we all had collectively agreed that it was like shameful to be posting something right. just about your normal life, you know, where we could like all be in sync about that. And so that, in that way, anger was kind of grounding to me to see it. Like I felt like so much in college, like I'd be walking around just like filled with like rage about something. And everybody's just like, I remember, okay, other short tension, I'm not going to go into it, but like when Evo Morales was overthrown last fall at Worcester, like I was just like totally just devastated. And yeah. he was like kind of a hero of mine, and like walking to Lowry and like trying to like tell people about it, people being like, oh, that's sad. Huh. You know? Yeah. And anyway, so like being out here, like that was, it was also felt like a time when people were willing to listen, like to things that I wanted to talk about, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, like I only had access to these very few people who I didn't have a ton in common with, but like I think the main way that I channeled that was like, this is a time where people are willing to listen to me when they maybe wouldn't before. And so mm-hmm. like I think it was really grounding for me to like, you know, talk to my coworkers about things who are, you know, none of my coworkers were very like, I mean, some of them are a little bit politically involved, but they were not like super, I hate throwing around the word, but radical, blah, blah, blah. But you know, like mm-hmm. not really. A lot of the things that were like becoming a little more mainstream, they hadn't been involved with before. And to have a space where like maybe like, I don't know everything or very much at all, but like a little bit of a leg up of just like a little more time paying attention to some of these things. Mm-hmm. And it felt really grounding for me and very like hopeful to be able to like make any bit of progress with, mm-hmm. with people who like maybe like bringing people into something that they didn't feel like they had a place in before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of conversations like that with my boss's husband, and feeling like having access to someone who like actually has like the right. levers to kind of like affect these things, and you know, being able to make progress with him and like have him listen to me and respect my opinion, and to find common ground on that and kind of struggle together through things. I think that was the main way that I channeled things for me, even though I don't have very much of like a platform or access to a ton of people, but like just those few people around me, just like being able to take a few steps forward with like every random person that I know.
I ended the interview by asking for Robin's final thoughts.
It's nice to talk about this and like try to talk through and articulate things. There's obviously a million things to talk about, but I think that covers a lot of my strange experience here.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out more stories at worcesterdigital.org/2020summerstories.